Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and happy to be with you on this Tuesday. I hope you had a great weekend, that you are, you know, doing okay with all the holiday stuff that might be going on in your lives. I'm also happy that I have the interview I was supposed to give to you last week that there was some technical issues with, but this week I'm able to bring you the interview with author Brad Schaefer about his book Of Another Time and Place. This is historical fiction set in the main part of the story is set in World War II, although there is a more modern component to it as well. Let me go ahead and give you the description. A New York reporter travels to London, ostensibly to interview a retired concert pianist and former German flying ace. But we learn Harmon Becker is far more than just another old soldier in a lost war. At the urging of his courageous lover, Amelia, now deceased after a long and happy marriage, he did an extraordinary thing, committed treason against the Third Reich, even at the same time he was awarded the highest honors by Hitler himself. So this is World War II, and if you've listened to the podcast, you know that I have a fascination with World War II novels. I even did a one whole episode on World War II novels that I've read and enjoyed. And this is another one, but it's a slightly different perspective because it is told from the perspective of Harmon Becker, who was in the Luftwaffe. He was a World War II pilot, but for Germany. So you see the war through his eyes, but through the eyes of someone who had been living most of his life under Hitler's influence and hearing all of the propaganda and everything that went into that. So he has some ambivalence towards a lot of things, and you know what, Brad's going to talk about this in the interview and explain it much better than I can since he wrote it. But I really appreciated, you know, when I first started reading this, I was like, how's it going to be reading this character? Is he going to resonate with me? Is he going to rub me the wrong way? And we kind of go through this story in the same way that Rachel does. She's the reporter that goes to interview Harmon, and she is Jewish, and she goes in disliking him intensely and feeling a lot of anger toward him and bitterness. And then their relationship sort of evolves a little bit as he tells her his story. And so we kind of are also Rachel as we take this story, trying to figure out just what his motivation was and what his thoughts and feelings were as he proceeded through the war, encountering a lot of different events and a lot of different influences, etc., that changed the way he initially felt about the war and Hitler himself. So as I said, Brad can explain this a lot better than I can. So we're going to go ahead and get to that interview with Brad Schaefer. Again, the book is Of Another Time and Place. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
We are here to talk about your book, Of Another Time and Place. Before we get to the book itself, though, I would love for my listeners to get to know you a little bit. If you could just tell us something about yourself, about your life, whatever you're comfortable sharing, that would be great.
Sure. I live in New Jersey now, but I'm from Illinois originally, and I went to the University of Illinois, and where I studied communication. And besides writing, my day job has actually been, because I lived in Chicago, my day job has been a commodities trader for many, many years. In fact, I was one of those guys that you used to see in the colorful jackets screaming and yelling in the trading pits, like in the movie Trading Places and whatnot. So, but they're mostly gone now. And so, like I said, I live in New Jersey now, and I'm happily married with two kids, and I've been writing for, gosh, for a long time now. And so this is my first foray into the published novel world. So it's very exciting.
Okay, thank you. So let's talk about Of Another Time and Place. Can you tell us a little bit about the story?
Sure. And cut me off if I start to get long-winded. It's really the story of a New York reporter named Rachel. She comes to London to interview a retired concert pianist. His name is Harmon Becker. He's pretty much the protagonist in the book. Becker's a German transplant in London, and he actually flew fighter planes in the Luftwaffe during World War II, so he's an old man now. And Rachel won't tell him why she's there to see him until he tells her the whole story of his war and how he became a prisoner. And so a lot of the book takes place really during the pre-war and war years of Becker, and it's Becker's recollections of not just the war, but growing up in this small Bavarian village of Stauffenberg, which I made up on the Main River in the 1930s. And it's his impressions of the rise of the Nazis as seen through the eyes of a boy who really was only cared about two things. One was playing piano, which he learns under the tutelage of a guy named Leo Kropinski, who's actually the only remaining Jew in Stauffenberg. Second is getting to know this woman that he's fallen for named Amelia, who's a friend of Kropinski and eventually becomes Becker's wife. But as the Nazis take over the town, he's not oblivious to their dogma, but he sees the way the Kropinskis are persecuted, especially, it is especially troubling. But he's one of those ambivalent sorts that I think you saw a lot in Germany at that time. I mean, yeah, Hitler seemed a bit angry and eccentric to him, but also look how much he improved the country since the Depression, so it was that sort of thing. But Amelia, she's 2 years older and wiser. She isn't fooled a bit, and, she tries to make him see the truth about who Hitler really is. So basically, war comes, he gets brought into, he becomes a fighter pilot, and he's so good at it that he actually gets awarded the Knight's Cross by Hitler himself. And it's when he's along the way, he stops at his hometown, and he visits his family and Amelia, and while he's there, he's on the way to go see Hitler at Berchtesgaden, and while he's there, he learns that Amelia's been up to something that if it's discovered, it could get her, now Becker, since he doesn't report her to the SS, killed. And it's really this untold story of how Becker protects Amelia's secret and then through a series of events eventually comes to commit all-out treason himself that so intrigues Rachel in the present day that she has to come and meet him now as an old man. And then we learn at the very end of the story what her connection is. Mm-hmm. And I won't tell your readers that. You have to read that.
Right, exactly.
That's sort of a brief synopsis.
Yeah, and you talk a little bit in the foreword at the beginning about your inspiration for the story. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that here?
Sure. Well, I mean, I've always, I come from a military family. My father was a Marine. He was actually decorated. He was wounded in Korea. My brother flew helicopters for the Navy for a long time. So I've always been interested in airplanes and, an aircraft. And I even took flying lessons for a little bit until my daughter was born. And then, I realized that probably wasn't the smartest thing to do when you have a newborn. So I've always been interested in aircraft, and I'm also a musician, so the story was kind of a confluence of those two. But what I mentioned in the book is that, in the foreword, is that I wanted to tell a unique World War II story from a perspective that really hasn't been explored in fiction or film very much. And so my elderly neighbor was a navigator on a B-17, of all things. I discovered, just talking to him, and actually helped him with his memoirs. He was shot down over Germany, and he spent a year as a prisoner. And he told me that after the war, he was in a glider club that had members who'd been actual German flyers during the war, and then they'd moved to the United States. So I figured, if they could become friends with the very guys that were once literally trying to kill them, maybe I could carefully broach the subject of the war seen through the eyes of a German fighter pilot, which was actually one of the most dangerous missions of any service by 1944. So That was my fresh approach. So really, my neighbor kind of gave me the spark of all things.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
And so,
go ahead.
I was just asked about the challenges of writing a book from the perspective of a character that many people would find unsympathetic at first glance, or even worse, because they see the word Nazi and immediately form an impression. So what were some of the challenges?
Oh yeah, I mean. First of all, this was certainly, obviously, as you read the book, no celebration of the cause whatsoever. Quite the opposite. It was a condemnation of it. In fact, that was, I think, the real challenge, because I wanted to explore, you know, an age-old question. You know, can good men fight for bad things? And if so, how can they redeem themselves if they can? You know. So I said about telling the story of, I tried to make him a rather morally ambiguous soldier who, as he learns more about, you know, the cause for which he's fighting, becomes more disenchanted with his regime, but still feels honor-bound to uphold, you know, his sacred oath to Germany and protect it from raids that were massacring civilians and destroying cities and all that. So, I mean, war from the German perspective isn't new, per se. I mean, we've seen their stories told, like, usually in U-boat films, like Das Boot or The Enemy Below, or kind of come to mind. But in these stories, the politics of the German soldiers that we do feel sympathy for because of the dangerous and underdog circumstances goes unexplored. But I didn't want to let my Germans off that easily. So I strove to keep the evil of Nazis woven throughout the book. And I wanted the reader to feel for Becker, but also loathe the thing that he fights for, something that he comes to loathe himself at the end. So I try, and I also try to balance it by keeping, I try to present several different perspectives that I think ran the gambit of the Germans at the time. I mean, on each end of the moral ledger, there's a spectrum. There's Amelia, who hates Hitler and does all she can to resist him. And then there's, on the other side, there's Becker's kid brother, Paul, who's actually a rabid Hitler youth Nazi to the core. And then, like, in between, there are the pilots, the townspeople, Becker's father, who's a bit of a cynic, you know, who just sees the Nazis as nothing different than the old order, just with a new, you know, with a new gloss to it. And the topic, so it kind of presented a tightrope, which I hope the readers will conclude that I navigated successfully. You know, but, so there we go.
Okay, you've been talking about the main character, Harmon Becker. What is it about Harmon, that you think might resonate with readers as they walk this sort of tricky emotional tightrope with you?
Oh, I think it's his humanness, his three-dimensional aspect to him. I mean, he's neither a Nazi robot, you know, like his kid brother, nor is he a moral crusader like Amelia. I mean, he behaves, in ways that I think many of us would, if we lived in that time and were under constant, you know, political indoctrination. But the difference between him and his brother is that music is really his ideology. That was something I could identify with as a musician. So it's not Nazism. I mean, he didn't really care about it. And he also has firsthand experience and, in fact, comes to deeply care for a Jewish family. So he has these counterbalances to the blind nationalism and the anti-Semitism that were rampant in Germany, you know, by the late 30s. And when faced with Amelia's, you know, treason, he doesn't immediately become the hero. I mean, in fact, he admits he's scared out of his wits about it. And lacking the benefit of hindsight that we have today, it takes some extraordinary and cathartic events he experiences firsthand to make him turn on the Nazis. So I try to remind the reader that, you know, he's a soldier. To go from swearing a personal oath to Hitler, which is what all German soldiers were required to do, I mean, not to Germany, but to Hitler himself, oddly enough, to committing treason against the Third Reich requires a pretty momentous shift in attitude, and it wouldn't happen all at once. So I think a lot of his thoughts and a lot of his sleepless nights and a lot of his weighing, you know, his debating in his mind what to do, I think is more the way, you know, we would behave. Because, I mean, think about it. You know, if he got caught, he would be executed, and so would his whole family. So he had to weigh that with you know, doing what is right. So I tried to make him as three-dimensional as possible in that respect.
I do need to jump in here because it's about time for the first break of the podcast. We have talked a little bit about Harmon, and you've heard Brad's explanation or description of Harmon and how his character changes throughout. One thing that I found really interesting while I was reading this book was that I was also listening to a book. I've spoken about author Jacqueline Winspear and her Maisie Dobbs series before, and I was listening to Lessons in Secrets at the same time that I was reading this book. That book takes place in 1932 in Britain, but you're really seeing the rise of Hitler and fascism, and there's so the National Socialist Party. And there's concern in Britain, but there's also people who are dismissing it as, you know, not that big of a deal, not a concern. So it was really fascinating to me to listen to that book while I was reading Brad's book and to see a couple of different perspectives on the war and its beginnings and, you know, everything that led up to the actual war itself. So that, of course, brings me to Audible because I was listening to a book, as you know, and Audible is one of my favorite ways to get my audiobooks. So I have them to listen in the car, listen to it while I'm working out, listen to all those times when I can't actually be physically reading a book. Audible is great because when you sign up, you get 30 days free to try it out and you get a free audiobook. You also get, when you sign up, for every month, you get that free audiobook. Well, you get a credit for an audiobook with your monthly fee. You also get to choose from two of their Audible originals, and there's a lot of different things that you can choose. You can choose from so many different genres: mystery, memoir, nonfiction, historical fiction, if that's what you like. And you can keep your library forever, regardless of if you cancel, which you can do at any time. So if you want to try Audible, or maybe you want to give the gift of Audible to someone on your Christmas list, just go to audible.com/GSMCbook or text GSMCbook to 500-500 and start your free trial. Again, it's audible.com/GSMCbook or text GSMCbook to 500-500 and give yourself or someone else the gift of listening this holiday season.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Zero.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Before the break, Brad was talking about the main character of his book, of Another Time and Place. And now we're going to talk a little bit more about Amelia's character and her influence on the book as a whole. So let's go ahead and get back to that interview. Mm-hmm. And Amelia is really a secondary character in the book, and yet her influence is huge throughout the story. She really influences Harmon and his actions, and she's a bit of the moral compass of the story. She's a bit of the guiding influence in Harmon's life. So can you talk a little bit about her character?
Yeah, I mean, she started off just being sort of the vehicle, you know, for his, you know, for his moral dilemma. But as you know, as I got to write more about her, I actually came to really love this character. In a way, like if I could, I would have actually, you know, expanded the book and even written something a little bit more about her. Who knows? I might even, you know, explore her in another book. But I felt like the only emotion as powerful as love, you know, could really prompt a soldier to turn against his own country. And so Amelia was vital to instilling in him his humanity. You know, I mean, she's strong, and she's a very strong character, probably the strongest in the book. But because she had to be, because in war, women always have to be the strongest. I mean, when you think about it, unlike any other war, World War II was really, if Victor David Hansen, the historian, really sums it up, is World War II is basically a war of military waging war against civilians. It was the first war that saw many more civilians killed than soldiers. And so the people back home really suffered terrible hardships. I mean, few German civilians escaped, you know, the consequences of Hitler's madness. And I felt that really to understand Becker, you had to know Amelia and his love for her, as almost every action he takes is really a consequence of their relationship. So she really saves him in a sense. And I fell in love with her because of that, because she acts out of a sense of moral clarity that Becker really lacks at first. I mean, and she's also frightened. You know, she's a frightened young woman with a sick mother and an SS officer who lusts for her, trying to survive a world she thinks has gone mad while staying true to her beliefs. So that's, her inspiration for the character was actually my wife, in the sense that I admire her because she's at her best when things are their worst, and I think that's a sign of true character and fortitude. So, yeah, I did come to like her a lot. I wish I had spent a little bit more time on her, because no book is perfect, as we know. So, any of any writers listening out there, you're never going to be completely satisfied.
True. And then there's also, so there's that relationship between Harmon and Amelia, obviously. This relationship between Harmon and Rachel, and very sort of contentious at the beginning, as, you know, they both have their reasons for conducting this interview. Can you talk about how their relationship sort of evolves throughout the book?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that, you know, so here's this Jewish reporter, Rachel, you know, probably at least a generation, if not two generations removed from Becker, coming to London and, you know, to interview this guy. And we don't know why. It would seem like, you know, you talk about two completely different worlds colliding. Like, she's not interviewing him about music. She's not a historian. She's just a reporter. So when she first meets him, you know, she feels nothing really but disdain for old Becker because, I mean, he's a former Nazi, you know, in her eyes, and, you know, she has every right to despise him for that, even as he bristles at the idea. But she comes to see that he, you know, throughout the interview process, that he does feel true contrition, and he also is grieving the recent passing of Amelia, who becomes his wife. You know, that's no secret in the book. He mentions her right away. And so she kind of lets her guard down a bit and lets him open up to her. And eventually she comes to see him for who he really is. She kind of evolves with him along with the reader. You know, the reader and Rachel are probably feeling the same emotions. Because, you know, he's telling the story to her as much as he is to us. For his part, Becker, I guess, eyes her with suspicion at first because, you know, her being there is strange to him, right? But he's too intrigued to deny the interview. And I think he comes to see her maybe as a judge and jury and seeks her pardon, you know, for fighting for the side that really tried to annihilate her people. I think he sees her as one who has the moral authority to bestow redemption upon him. So they kind of grow close as the story progresses. And then at the end, you see why, you know, what's so important about him to her and vice versa. So.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of research did you do for the story, and how long did you spend on that process?
Well, unfortunately, I had no access to actual living German aces, which would have obviously been a treasure trove of info. But there are only a handful of them left, and none near me. In fact, I had to write the book taking place 10 years ago as opposed to now. So present day is really 2008 or whenever, because, you know, they'd all be dead by now. So he's in his 80s, and it's like that would have been 10 years ago. But I did immerse myself in books, you know, a lot of diaries out there, interviews, historical documents, technical data, even, you know, gun camera footage. And, I mean, honestly, YouTube is a great tool for writers as well, anybody listening. So I also spent time both in London and Germany, where the book takes place in the present and the past, respectively. There was this little Bavarian village I passed through, and I fell in love with it. And I used it as the model for my fictional town of Stauffenberg, which I actually named in honor of Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg, who was the one who orchestrated the plot to kill Hitler, and for which he was executed. Mm-hmm. I would say, off and on, the book was rattling around in my head for about 10 years. It was actually originally a screenplay, in fact, but I became interested in Becker enough that I wanted to learn more about him than 120 pages of script, so I expanded it into a novel. It was a gradual evolution, but I'm trying to think. Although once I sat down to write it, it probably only took me about 3 months from typing chapter one to the end. So I write fast when I'm on a roll.
Wow, that's impressive. Do you have other books that people can find if they're interested?
Well, this is actually my first published novel. There's a earlier version of this floating around. I don't think you can find it anymore, but that I wrote just kind of as a test thing. I'd actually self-published a version of this a while ago, and then I realized that I needed an agent to do it right, and I rewrote much of it. But so this is really my first bona fide published novel. This was by Post Hill Press, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. But I've actually completed 3 other novels and 1 memoir of my time on the trading floor. So hopefully if this book does well enough, my agent will find, you know, the rest a good home. The problem is that, yeah, my other books are all over the map in terms of genre. We've discussed this, my agent and I, as because I have a lot of interests. And so, like, I have one, which I think is actually my best work, that's like an ordinary people type of domestic family drama. I've got one that explores the supernatural, demons, and the conflict of religion and science. I've got the third one that I wrote, that's a Tom Clancy like techno thriller. And so, and then, as I said, I've got my recollections of really a quarter century in the commodities trade. So, but I figure, you know, one of my favorite authors is Ken Follett, and he's pretty diverse. You know, I mean, he writes contemporary novels like Whiteout and historical stuff like A Place Called Freedom. So hopefully my readers will like me for the craft as much as, you know, my chosen genre, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's very diverse. I'm intrigued, actually.
Yeah, almost too much. My agent's like, well, just keep writing, you know. But yeah, he's right, you know. But he's also been very encouraging about just letting me kind of go where I want to go.
Yeah. Are you working on something right now, then?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. Actually, just before we did this, I just typed in word number 25,000 of a contemporary novel that I'm writing about two people recovering from personal tragedies who find each other really in the Caribbean facing a hurricane together. I actually like to explore contemporary issues a little bit, as you know, and then to kind of put them together in different scenarios. And so, for instance, this one has to do with one loses a son, and the other one has a father who is in who suffers from dementia. So, and these are kind, you know, one lost a son to a drunk driver. And so, you know, I mean, these are things that I think a lot of people relate to in one way or the other. Certainly the dementia side of it, you see that all the time now. And I guess once that's finished, though, I'll move back into historical fiction, which probably is my, seems like the thing I like the most. So I think my next book will take place during the Civil War. I mean, I live just 3 hours from Gettysburg, so that's a great place to do research. And also it has great pubs, but that's another story. So,
doesn't
come
hurt.
On now. I'm an author. I got you have to. You know, I'm trying to do the Hemingway drinking thing, right?
There's got to be perks, right?
I'm not very good at it, so they usually end up drinking a Diet Coke, but whatever.
Nobody has to know that there's no rum in that Diet Coke.
Nobody has to know, right? Yeah, I can just sit there and just act all mean, even though I'm stone sober. So.
You mentioned before
you drinking.
Yeah, well, yeah. You're not encouraging drinking. You're drinking Diet Coke.
Exactly.
You mentioned earlier that you've been writing for a while. So is this something that you have always wanted to do? Or did you start writing later in life?
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny. I've been asked that before. And I think the point of embarkation on this journey, to sound very cheesy and cliche, I had to use the word journey once in an interview. I hate that word, but it's perfect for this. Seventh grade is when I got interested in writing for more than just school. You know, I was fortunate in my middle school, which was Barrington Middle School in Barrington, Illinois. I had a series of really good teachers. I don't want to mention their names because I don't want to embarrass them, but you know, some may even be passed away at this point. I'm not sure, but and they really lit the spark. And I've really been writing ever since. I mean, articles, screenplays, blogs, essays, anything. It's really something I just love to do. And, you know, you can find me in the Wall Street Journal, New York Daily News, and other blogs. So I'm out there.
Hey, I'm going to jump in here again because it is time for another break and time again to talk about Audible. I keep saying it, but you know, I love a good audiobook, and there's really no better place to get Audible audiobooks than at Audible. I mean, they have a huge selection, as I said, and you can get, as an Audible member, you can get more than ever before, because in addition to the title that you get each month with your credit, you also get 2 Audible originals that you can choose each month. Those you can't find anywhere else. So you're getting 3 titles each month with your monthly cost. That is really great. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at right there. I can't tell you what a good deal that is. So you get one Audible, you get the 2 Audible originals, one audiobook, the 2 Audible originals. And did you know that they even have fitness programs that you can't get anywhere else? So if that's something that you're interested in, you should definitely check out Audible. There's really never been a better time to experience Audible. You can try it for free for 30 days just by visiting audible.com/GSMCbook or by texting GSMCbook, all one word, GSMCbook, to 500-500. Again, that's audible.com/GSMCbook, or text GSMCbook to 500-500. Start listening. Give yourself, again, that gift of an audiobook, or give someone on your list the gift of listening and the gift of audiobooks this holiday season. And now we do have to take that second break of the podcast, so stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I will be right back.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Zero.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and now we have the conclusion to my interview with Brad Schaefer about his book Of Another Time and Place. So let's go ahead and get right back to that interview. You said that you started this process as a screenplay. Was it really just that process of exploring Harmon as a character more that encouraged you to write a novel, or was it something else? I mean, did it really... Had you tried writing novels before, or did this novel simply come about because you wanted to explore that character in a screenplay further?
No, you know, I actually tried and stopped writing a couple books when I was in college. And I realized I just wasn't, you know, some people have it. You know, some people can write, you know, can write really, really, really great material, you know, from at a very young age. But I was one of those guys who I just think I had to work at it. And like, if I look at the stuff that I wrote back in college, I'd be like, oh my God, that's horrible. But it's all part of the development process. You know, you're going to write a bunch of crap before you finally get your voice. And so, I was inspired by like Pat Conroy back then, like Prince of Tides, I thought was a great book. So, and I realized though that eventually you got to write your own voice. And it took me a long time to figure that out. So, Of Another Time and Place was really the first time I think I got it right. And I wrote a book that I'm proud enough to put my name on and put out there and say, here, I think you guys will like this. So, it takes a while for me anyway.
Sure. So out of your experience, do you then have advice for aspiring authors?
Yeah. Number one, just keep writing. Just write. And don't worry about if it's not good, because like I said, it's like anything else, you know, it's just like practicing a sport or something like that. You know, just the more swings you get, the more accurate, you know, the better of a hitter you'll be. But you know, within that, you know, write about what you, I always say, write about what you know. Not only will it ring more authentic, but it's also, you know, it's also more fun. And it's also, and there's always also a couple little things I learned along the way, like tricks of the trade. Like the best way to proofread is to read your own words out loud, like you're reading it as an audiobook. Because you'll catch so many little mistakes that the skimming eye overlooks. And you also hear what the reader hears, which helps you, you know, hone the cadence and the sentence length and all that. And just, like I said, just write every day, even if it's just one line. And also don't try to overwrite. You know, don't try to sound literary. One successful writer actually told me that you should write like you're telling someone a story over a coffee at the kitchen table. So less is more, you know. I actually recommend people to read Stephen King's book On Writing. It's a great source, I think, of sound advice. And also, if you can, and I've alluded to that already, get an agent, if you can. It's a crowded field, and basically, I mean, they'll get you work in front of the right people more often than not. It's very hard to do it on your own in this day and age, especially for fiction writing, because fiction is such a difficult field right now to break into. I mean, you know, unless you're already established, you know, so much of the business now seems like it's political books and fact and fiction, I'm sorry, nonfiction and all that. So an agent definitely helps.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned reading out loud as though you were reading an audiobook. Is there any possibility of this being an audiobook?
I hope so. I would love it to be an audiobook. I'm not capable of reading it myself. I'm not a very good reader. I reason fits and starts, but I would love it if they did that. I'm a big fan of audiobooks. I think they're a great way to spend your time if you're driving or something like that. For instance, the last book I read was actually read to me. It was a Ken Follett book. It was A Place Called Freedom. And it was interesting because the actor was great who read it. I forget who it was, but he had the Scottish accents down and stuff. And the book really came alive. And I think, if you're going to walk down the street or if you're driving or something like that and you're going to have downtime anyway, put in an audiobook. It's great. And you'd be surprised.
That's what I mean.
So, I'm a big fan. I'd love my book to be an audiobook.
Yeah, I love audiobooks also. I commute a lot, so I listen, therefore, to a lot of audiobooks, which is nice, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised how many books you read, right? I mean, how many more you read that way. So, it's funny. It's like technology is always a double-edged sword, but I think when it comes to writing, I mean, I've already mentioned YouTube and the audiobook and whatnot. I think there's a lot of tools out there for people who both love to write and people who love to read. That are open to you that weren't, a generation ago or so.
Sure. You've mentioned Ken Follett. Who else are your favorite authors, or what are your favorite genres when you have time to read?
Yeah, well, it's a hard one, but names that pop out at me, I love Cormac McCarthy. I think No Country for Old Men is a literary classic myself. I mean, you can actually taste the dust of the desert, and you can... Yeah, and you can feel Ed Tom, the sheriff's concern, and all these characters are so three-dimensional, and they're just beautifully done. Also, I alluded to, Stephen King and Ken Follett. But I really read any genre, but I suppose my Desert Island library would be historical fiction. You learn a lot. I guess because you learn a lot about great characters in extraordinary times, and they emerge out of extraordinary times, and you learn about some people who are real, some who are fictional. It's interesting to see people, made up characters intersecting with real life people, like in the Flashman novels by George MacDonald Fraser, he runs into everybody from Abraham Lincoln to Lord Cardigan but he's a fictional character himself. So it's kind of interesting. And then, really all you need to do is read Ken Follett's Pillars of the Earth or, Stephen Pressfield's Gates of Fire about the Battle of Thermopylae to understand my attraction to the historical fiction genre. I just think it's a very rich genre, and it allows you to both teach history and also, for me, I guess it fulfills my love of history and my love of fiction writing all at once.
Mm-hmm. Which actually makes me segue into a different question. Herman Becker meets Hitler when he receives his Knight's Cross, and he also meets Goring at that encounter. So how did you go about writing real people in fictional settings? Was that difficult, or was it a challenge in any way?
Well, that was hard. How do you, I almost debated whether or not to even put Goring was a little bit easier. I mean, I can explain that in a second, but how do you put a guy Adolf Hitler, who's just become this cartoon character of evil? I mean, some people are just so unbelievably bad. It almost seems like they're not real. So what I wanted, the main reason of putting him in there was really to show Becker firsthand who he's actually fighting for, not the poster, not the, not the newsreel, not the propaganda, but the actual guy himself, the guy who by December 1943, the war was going against him. He was exhausted. He had to be mentally exhausted. By this time, he had been on drugs from his quack physician. He was developing what looked like Parkinson's. His hand was shaking. He was becoming hunched over and stiff. And so I wanted to present Becker what Hitler really was as compared to what he grew up believing he was. And so it was hard. I only had him in that one scene because I didn't want to try and make this a book about Hitler at all. I didn't even want to justify, I didn't want to dignify him with any more words than I had to. So I just gave him, this... I figured he'd probably give just sort of this boilerplate speech that, I think I mentioned in the book that his aides are kind of looking bored because they'd heard this a million times, ranting and raving against the Untermensch, the Jews, and talking about how the Russians are on, all the megalomaniacal delusions that he had, and then just disappeared because he really didn't care about his people. I mean, you know, and so that was the challenge with him. And I also wanted to show how Hitler still had a mesmerizing look to him. That, you know, because you have to, why, how is it that all these people, you know, a nation like Germany, a very sophisticated nation, how could they fall behind this guy, you know, fall in line with this guy? So I wanted to show a little bit of that, I guess, the residual magnetism that he might have had a lot more 10 years before when he took over the chancellery. As with Goring, you know, Goring was just a sycophantic fat oaf, you know. I mean, that's, he was a very bad man. I mean, this guy was part of orchestrating the Holocaust. He wasn't just a Luftwaffe commander, but he was also a very political guy, and he was always like trying to curry favor with Hitler. So I wanted to kind of show him, you know, people who had met him actually said that they thought he wore makeup, for example. He was very vain and pompous. So I tried to do that. And those are really, I guess, the only two historical characters that that I threw in there. I thought the story could stand alone enough without it. I wanted to tell it more about the people who lived in that time, from the pilots to the civilians, you know, to everybody, even like the GIs, you know, when he finally is taken prisoner. So, I mean, World War II was a story about the small people. It wasn't a story about Hitler and Goring so much as it was about the people on the ground and in the air and under the water who were just struggling to survive this horrible, horrible event that these madmen had brought upon us. So, I didn't want to give him too much airtime, really.
Right. Thank you for that. So where can people find you online? Do you have a website? Do you have social media? Where can they go to find you?
Yeah, I mean, the usual stomping grounds. You know, I don't have a website yet, but I do have the Brad Schaefer author Facebook page, so you can just look it up. I have a personal Facebook page, but I also have my author page is the one that's really devoted to my writing. And like I said before, I've also had a lot of articles. I've had three articles in the Wall Street Journal, but mostly business oriented. I have a few pieces about World War II in the New York Daily News, and I've written for everybody from David Frum on one side of the aisle to Ben Shapiro on the other. So I try to balance my outlook on things. But if you go on Daily Wire, you'll see a lot of my military stuff. I have a series about the Battle of Midway, a series about the Battle of Chosin, which is where the Marine Corps was in Korea. So I have a personal interest in that because my dad. I just wrote a piece about the Battle of Antietam, and I've written about Stalingrad. So there, if you're interested in military history, you'll find me out there a lot.
Okay, thank you. We have covered multiple topics, but is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to touch on, whether about your book or writing in general, or really anything that we haven't covered?
Well, I guess for anybody just like listening, you know, it took me a long time to find my groove writing, you know, and you do it every day, but keep writing, because even if nothing ever gets published, you know, if anybody wants to leave a legacy, what a great way to do it. What a great way to get an article published or something like that. What a great way to show your kids and your grandkids who you were when you're gone, you know, because we're only on this earth for a short bit of time. And so it's, you know, one of the reasons I like to write is because even when I'm dead and buried, you know, I'll have grandchildren, presumably, or great grandchildren who will be able to, you know, read this book and go, oh, that's what Grandpa Schaefer did. You know, he wasn't just this photograph. He was actually a human being, we thought. I mean, on the overall, I guess another inspiration for me writing this book actually is I'm actually not Jewish. I'm Catholic, but I'm greatly concerned about, you know, the rise of anti-Semitism across the globe right now. And I hope that, I mean, it's such a vile mindset. And so I hope that my book in some small way reminds people how easy it is for people who brought us, you know, Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, and Goethe, you know, to turn to their dark side in times of chaos and nationalist fervor, I guess, and to monsters like Hitler and Heydrich and Himmler. I mean, it can happen to any people. You know, the Germans were among the most sophisticated people in the world at that time. And for them to fall prey to this means that nobody is immune to it. So hopefully the book is a tiny bit of a warning of how it can happen subtly. You know, there's that whole, you've heard that cliche expression about the boiled frog, right? You know, where if you throw a frog in hot water, it'll jump out. But if you put a frog in cold water and slowly turn up the heat, it'll boil itself. And that's kind of what happens. It's not like in 1933, people went to war in Germany. It happens slowly over time. And before you know it, you're like, wow, how did we get to this place? So, you know, hopefully a book like this will at least remind people of, you know, how it can happen. And let's not repeat that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me. I really appreciate
it. No problem.
And talking to me about your book, which is great. And I love historical fiction. So this was, and I have a fascination with World War II. So this was a lot of fun. Well, I don't know if it was fun.
Good.
But
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I really did. I did. Right. So thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast.
My pleasure.
And once again, I do want to thank Brad for taking the time out of his weekend to talk to me and for being patient with the technical difficulties that we had to reschedule for a completely different weekend. So I really appreciate him taking the time out of two weekends to talk to me. If you are interested in Of Another Time and Place, and it's really, really good, you should be interested in it if you love or if you are a fan of historical fiction, then this is your lucky day because I do have three copies to give away. All you have to do to enter the giveaway is go to our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and comment on this post. It'll be it's episode 129, Interview with Brad Schaefer. Just comment on that post and you will be automatically entered to win a copy of Another Time and Place. Again, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. It's really easy, and you could give yourself a bit of a holiday gift, you know, if you win the holiday gift of a historical fiction novel that is just sent to you in the mail. Isn't that lovely? So thank you so much for joining me. Thank you again to Brad for taking the time to talk to me about his book. Thank you, as always, for joining me. Join me again on Thursday when I have yet another interview. This time, we're kind of going a completely different route from historical fiction to contemporary romance. So a slightly different type of book. But I will be speaking with Jennifer Wilk about her book, Learning to Love. So join me on Thursday for that. In the meantime, if you're not too swamped with holiday stuff, go out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.